Mrs. Rachel prided herself on always speaking her mind. She proceeded to speak it now, having adjusted her mental attitude to this amazing piece of news.
"Well, Marilla, I'll just tell you plain that I think you're doing a mighty foolish thing, a risky thing, that's what. You don't know what you're getting. You're bringing a strange child into your house and home, and you don't know a single thing about him, nor what his disposition is like, nor what sort of parents he had, nor how he's likely to turn out.
Why, it was only last week I read in the paper how a man and his wife up west of the island took a boy out of an orphan asylum, and he set fire to the house at night. Set it on purpose, Marilla. Nearly burnt them to a crisp in their beds. And I know another case where an adopted boy used to suck the eggs. They couldn't break him of it. If you had asked my advice in this matter, which you didn't do, Marilla, I'd have said, for mercy's sake, not to think of such a thing, that's what."
This Job's comforting seemed neither to offend nor to alarm Marilla. She knitted steadily on.
"I don't deny there's something in what you say, Rachel. I've had some qualms myself. But Matthew was terrible set on it. I could see that, so I gave in. It's so seldom Matthew sets his mind on anything that when he does, I always feel it's my duty to give in. As for the risk, there's risks in pretty much everything a body does in this world. There's risks in people having children of their own, if it comes to that. They don't always turn out well."
It is a truth, universally acknowledged, that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. However little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first entering a neighborhood, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered the rightful property of some one or other of their daughters.
"My dear Mr. Bennet," said his lady to him one day, "have you heard that Netherfield Park is let at last?"
Mr. Bennet replied that he had not.
"But it is," returned she.
Mr. Bennet made no answer.
"Do you not want to know who has taken it?"
cried his wife impatiently. "You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it." This was invitation enough.
The weather is changing, and sunburns are best when you first feel that sun-hot heat with a cold brew in your hand. In short, it's mid-April, in the mid-afternoon, and perfect for an icy beer because this morning radiated real heat, not through a window, but right on my pale, starved skin. However, the pause ends and rant starts up again as I open my mouth to suggest we walk. I scoot to the edge of the stoop. Just a little wiggle forward, and I'm one more inch toward ascension, about to slip the surly bonds when she says,
"He never shuts up about you."
"Hmm? I'm sure I didn't hear right."
"You, after the potty, he never shuts up."
"What do you mean?"
"You."
Okay, I'm still wondering what, and she's suddenly gone dark under the bright light. I'm scared we won't be hitting that bar. Won't be having sunbrews. And she's brewing up a powerful fuss that makes whatever bad day she had, or a series of them lately, now sound somehow like my doing. My hand is still orange, so I lay it gently on my lap, sunny side up. I tilt my head, weigh the weight of her words, and wait. There was no possibility of taking a walk that day. We had been wandering, indeed, in the leafless shrubbery an hour in the morning, but since dinner, Mrs. Reed, when there was no company, dined early. The cold winter wind had brought with it clouds so somber and a rain so penetrating that further outdoor exercise was now out of the question. I was glad of it. I never liked long walks, especially on chilly afternoons. Dreadful to me was the coming home in the raw twilight, with nipped fingers and toes, and a heart saddened by the chidings of Bessie the nurse, and humbled by the consciousness of my physical inferiority to Eliza, John, and Georgiana Reed.
Mary rushes in and shuts your door.
"It happened again."
"You're calm."
"It was sitting on my keyboard this time."
"You are still calm."
"This is the third one."
"You're calm-ish."
"I'm sure it's Bob."
"You are calmish outside, but somewhat ruffled inside. You do not like handling problems. You far prefer disseminating corporate missives when called upon to do so,
for which you have received adequate procedural training. It's not that you don't care. You just have preferences in your day.